Shalom, good morning. This is Radio Shalom coming to you through Planet FM 104.6. And this morning's program is brought to you by the three J's, Jules, Joe and Joan. So welcome, Jules.
Good morning, Joan.
And we're on to comedy part three.
Excellent. And may I say that parts one and two were a real pleasure sitting here and doing it with you, and I'm pleased to be back. Part three. So a recap of parts one and two.
To refresh the memories.
And to those of you who haven't listened to those parts, Jewish humor. We spoke about the origin of Jewish humor, and the origin is out of oppression, out of deprivation. It was a form of survival and psychological cure for all the oppression. So we laughed. We became humorous. We found that the American population, maybe 20 years ago, 3% was Jewish, and 80% of the professional comedians were Jewish. So we asked ourselves why, and the reason is because we've had oppression, and because we've been laughing and being humorous for so many years, we had the practice, and we know that you have the practice, you get good. And so that's the reason why we have 80% Jewish comedians out of 100 in America. Our next topic is anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism, we also have anti-Zionism. Some people say that they're different. Some people say there is no difference. But we've always had that. We've always had anti-Semitism. Sometimes more, sometimes less. Some people think that anti-Semitism is the only way of Jewish life. It's not true. For instance, we have had what they call the golden years in Spain, in the Iberian Peninsula, Spain and Portugal. It started about 700 Common Era and probably finished up with the Spanish Inquisition in 1492. Those were the golden years, but in the golden years, there was a lot of oppression, there were pogroms, and of course anti-Semitism. But for hundreds of years, we had the golden years, and some of the best art, literature, music came out of those years.
And philosophy.
And philosophy, correct. The humor related to this is very vast, but I'll only share a few with you. Firstly, at the time of the Spanish Inquisition, everybody, Jews and Muslims, were required to convert to Christianity or face death. A lot of people were killed. A lot of Jews converted. A lot of Jews converted but remained faithful to their religion. And they obtained or got the name of Marranos. Now, Marranos, the word Marrano has two meanings. The one is a pig, and the other is somebody who doesn't obey. Commonly we talk about pigs, and this is the story. Winston Churchill said that he likes to deal with pigs. Why? Well, he said, dogs look up to you and cats look down at you. But pigs, he said, treat you as equals. Here's the story about, two stories about anti-Semitism. The first one is an anti-Semite is sitting at the counter in a bar. And he looks behind him, sitting at a table, there's a Jew. And he's very annoyed by the fact that there's a Jew sitting behind him in the same place. So he calls the barman over and he says to him, a round of your finest drinks for everybody in the bar except that man over there, pointing to the Jew. So the barman gives drinks to everybody, and the anti-Semite looks round to the Jew as if to say, well, that'll show you. But lo and behold, the Jew looks him straight in the eye and smiles. So the anti-Semite is really pretty angry. So he calls the barman over again and he says, barman, he says, another round of your finest for everybody in the bar and a burger, but not for the Jew. So they do this, and when that's done, he looks at the Jew and the Jew gives him an even larger smile. So he calls the barman over and he says, what kind of a Jew is this? Is he idiotic or is he just pretending to be idiotic? He says, no, sir, he's the owner. I think that sums up Judaism or Jewish humor and anti-Semitism. The other one was Moses Montefiore. We've heard of him.
Yes.
Great Sir Moses Montefiore in the United Kingdom. He was a great philanthropist. Among other things, he donated a lot of money to people to buy land in the then Palestine. So this one, the story was that he was at a party for the royalty, and one of the guests was a Russian general who was a known anti-Semite. When the Russian general saw Sir Moses, again, he was uncomfortable. He didn't like this, but he couldn't make a scene. So he went to Moses, and he said to him, you know, he said, I've just been to the most wonderful country. Where's that? Japan. Why? He says, you know, in Japan, they don't have any Jews and they don't have any pigs. He says, well, why don't you and I go there and then they'll have one of each? In all these troubles of anti-Semitism, you would expect that we abandoned our religion and converted. And some people did. But by force, I think we're inclined to defend ourselves if we're required to convert by force. Maybe that's one of the reasons why we don't want converts. If you want to convert to Judaism, wow, it's a long process. You want to convert to Christianity, it's quite short. You simply have to mean what you say, that you accept Jesus into your life, and you must be baptized. And it's a short process. And Islam is the same thing. You have to be sincere, but you simply have to say, I submit to the will of Allah. And then you're converted. But Judaism, no. Judaism, you have to study, and the rabbis have to be satisfied that you want to convert in your heart. That it's genuine. Yeah. So anti-Semitism is here. I dare say it'll still be going. Which leads us then on to survival. If we had all this anti-Semitism, we've got to talk about survival.
Some of the anti-Semitism was verbal, and some was actually punishment.
Some was, yes.
By taxes, by pogroms, by taking away their businesses, in any way in which they could. And for what?
I would think because it's, let's say, the survival of the fittest, but also the stronger oppress the weaker. And so throughout the centuries, Jews didn't have the strength, the physical strength. They didn't have strength in numbers, no army. And so they got oppressed. It was quite common for Russians, for instance, to go into Jewish shtetls. And just for the fun of it, they used to beat people up, but also take their possessions because it was easy. There was no resistance.
Yeah, Cossacks haven't got a good reputation. However, my father adored Russian poetry, adored Russian writing, adored Russian music. All those things which perhaps were not taken into consideration when they were looked upon as oppressors, and yet their literature was rich and their music was wonderful. And my father told me how they went to a concert where the greatest bass sang, and the whole audience was in tears, the Russians and Jews.
Right.
So when a culture, when you're born into a culture and your religion has another culture, it's quite happy if you can put them together. But when they, when you have the people that you admire for their writers and their musicians are the very people who are oppressing you, it's hard.
It's very hard. But that's a phenomenon because throughout the centuries we've had groups of people from the same country who oppress us. We've had groups of people that live with us side by side and prosper and develop within the same region. That's gone like that for years.
Oh,
you know what
word.
Happens? We get a leader who oppresses the Jews. And then sometimes the masses follow. So from living happily together, suddenly it becomes oppressive. And why? A leader, you know, Jews in history have been scapegoats. If you look at the Second World War, they were scapegoats. Mm. Hitler, he got the emotion of the people, and one way that it is to have an enemy in the form of the Jews. They were scapegoats.
Mm.
So we still survive. And here's the story about survival. The weather fundies announced that there's going to be a global tsunami and that the entire planet is going to be flooded, the entire planet. So they called on the leaders to talk to the people. So Ramakrishna, the Hindu priest, came on international television and he prayed and asked the people to pray for a decent reincarnation. And the Pope came on international television and he said, let us pray that we can accept Jesus into our hearts. And the right-wing imam came on international television and he said, let us pray for 40 virgins. And the chief rabbi came on international television and he said, my fellow Jewish people, we have 4 days to learn how to live underwater. Survival. Survival. They also tell the story about technology in Israel. The chief rabbi comes on and he says, we're going to die. And the liberals, we're going to die. And this is what we must do. We must pray. And then the technocrats from the universities of Haifa, Jerusalem, they come on television and they say, we've got 4 days to work out a way of how we're going to survive underwater. Because we know Israel is the leader in technology in the world. One of the people who spoke about or wrote about survival was Sholem Aleichem. Sholem Aleichem with his famous
in those
fiddler,
days.
Tevye the Melchika. Mm-hmm. And he wrote about the fictional city called Anatevka. But that was typical of the time. The people had nothing. They were poor. And, you know, he often, Tevye, look up to the sky and say, help me. Why am I so poor? You know, choose somebody else. his famous Fiddler on the Roof, he did that one song where he says, if I were a rich man. So he's standing there and he's looking up to the sky and he says, if I were a rich man. And one of the verses is he'd build a house in the middle of the town and it would have 20 rooms and it would have a nice roof. And then he says there would be one long staircase just going up and one even longer coming down and more leading nowhere just for show.
That's an aspiration.
It's an aspiration, but a staircase, more staircases just for show. So here he is in this pogrom-filled area, poor. They struggle to put bread on the table, and he's making fun of it. He's saying, well, you know, I'll build a staircase just for fun, leading straight up into the sky. He, Sholem Aleichem, was at a dinner with the famous American literature man, Mark Twain. And you know that they looked remarkably alike.
Really?
I know you can't all see this. I'm just going to give it to Joan. How about this? There's a picture of both of them. Don't they look similar? Or they certainly got similar hairstyles and similar moustaches. Right. So
they've both got a direct gaze. I didn't know that they lived at the same time.
They lived. They were contemporaries.
Right.
And what happened is this, that Mark Twain and Shalom Aleichem were at the same function, a dinner. And the compere introduced Shalom Aleichem as the Jewish Mark Twain. And Mark Twain jumped up and he said, I need to correct that. He said, I am the American Shalom Aleichem. That's a heartwarming story. Can you see? Do you agree? They look
they
similar?
They do, yes.
And their writings were similar as well. So Shalom Aleichem
wrote... both humorous.
Both humorous. And you'll remember Mark Twain wrote about the adventures of Tom Sawyer.
Mm-hmm.
That was life in America. And Shalom Aleichem wrote about Tevye, the Melchiker, life in the shtetl.
In the shtetl. Yes, if you read what happened to Anatika afterwards with the gulag.
Yeah.
That's where they land up.
That's where they land up. There are three main reasons or motivators that have allowed us to survive. The first one is religion. We've clung to our religion through thick and thin. Even though we're told to convert, we still cling to it. The second one is humor. And I'm serious about that.
I was just trying to think. Our religion doesn't really promote humor.
Religion doesn't promote humor, but there's a lot in the religion that says you must celebrate.
True.
You must be happy. And I think laughter, humor is part of
it.
Right.
Okay.
And that's, I think we heard the other day, Purim is a joyous...
True. I think Purim is the... It has all the stories in it. It has the getting into other characters, the costumes, the poking fun. It's. I think Purim should be celebrated in the park.
Purim should be celebrated in the park. We have Hanukkah in the park. Purim should also.
Absolutely.
In particular, Purim is for rejoicing. Purim is for eating, for feasting. There was a story which is typical or good for New Zealand. New Zealand is rugby, Meshuggah. So last year, the All Blacks played the Springboks, South Africa. And the score was 57 points to the All Blacks and naught.
To the box.
So what was the story? On Purim, we have Homantashen. Homantashen are these triangular pastries filled with either mon or with sweet stuff. And so they said, what's the difference between the Springboks and Homantashen? And the answer is Homantashen have got 3 points. The third reason why we survive is because we ask or we answer a question with a question.
True.
Which means, you know, like, do you want to go to a movie tonight? Why not? That's typical. But underlying that is if we answering a question with a question, the answer, the question becomes the answer. But more important is that we're asking questions.
Tell me how your question becomes an answer.
Well, do you want to go to a movie tonight? That's the question.
Are you asking me out?
Yes.
I was asking you with a question.
Okay. You'll notice I didn't say why not. I'm not true to this third phase of answering a question with a question. often I just give an answer and it's yes. A new philosophy in life. Yes to everything.
So you don't have to argue.
Don't have to argue.
Okay.
The fact that it's a question with a question, you answer a question with a question, means that we're asking questions. And we have been asking questions forever. And when you ask questions, then you get to asking the right questions. And it includes asking questions of your maker. And then you have this feel that I will survive. Because you're questioning. If you simply say, well, that's my lot in life, and I'm going to be run over by a bus and goodbye, well, you're not asking questions. If you're asking questions, what am I going to do when I cross the road? Should I watch out for a bus? Then you'll survive.
That asking questions is something that you're taught from an early age. My father always used to say, you ask the teacher questions, ask questions. I said, no, I don't want to draw attention to myself.
No, yes.
Don't accept what people tell you. Ask questions.
Ask questions.
It's remained with me.
So you want to ask me a question? You want to ask me for a date?
I've been asking you questions. I said, Jules, will you come and make some programs?
And I said,
why not?
Why me? Why not?
Okay.
We started this from, we got the Mount Sinai, we got the Torah, and after that we had the Gemara. And we got the Talmud, and that is a series of questions and answers. And we've progressed that throughout the centuries. The Greeks did that, the famous Socrates. He didn't actually have a philosophy, you know, like he wasn't existential. His philosophy was asking questions. And based on the answers, he would steer the questions in order to get to an answer. That's what Socrates did. And he never recorded anything. It was his student, Plato, I think, who recorded Socrates' philosophy.
When you say recorded, I thought you were talking about radio.
I like your thinking. It's good. It's good. Lateral.
I thought Socrates with radio.
Well, now that we survived, we've got to deal with guilt. Guilt is, it's probably too long to deal with.
We can do it in the next program.
So I think we might do it in the next program. Yes?
Are you asking a question?
I'm asking questions.
Yes, I think that would be a good idea.
What kind of answer is there? A straight yes. Ask a question.
Do you think, you know, the humor that we're talking of, it has been through the ages. It's such a different life that we've got now compared to what our parents had. And, in fact, our children have even got a different life to what we had. Has humor kept up with it, or are we still telling the old jokes?
We are doing exactly what's been done for thousands of years. We tell the old jokes and we invent new jokes. And Jewish humor, other humor as well, but particularly Jewish humor is situational, it's topical, and so we make jokes to suit the current events. So we'll make jokes about current presidents, we make jokes about what's going on now. We remember the past, we tell jokes about the Exodus, about Moses. Mm-hmm. Shall I tell you that joke about Moses and current events? I'll tell you. Moses, we know, was the prophet. So this is a story about a burglar. It's okay. Current events.
Did you tell it before?
Have I told it before? I told it to Joe before we started, but I don't think I've told it yet.
Okay, it doesn't matter if you tell it again.
You think people will forget?
No, so the story I don't think they forget.
The story was a burglar goes and he's burgling, he's doing a robbery on the house, and it's dark. And he's got a little flashlight, and he puts the flashlight on to see what he can steal, and he's got his bag that he's going to put the stuff into, and he hears this, Jesus is watching you. And he's startled, and he looks around in the semi-dark, and he can't see anything, so he continues looking for stuff with his little flashlight, And he hears again, Jesus is watching you. So he puts on his torch, and there in the corner is a parrot. And he says, did you say that? And the parrot says, I sure did. He says, what's your name? He says, my name's Moses. Moses! He says, what kind of people would name their parrot Moses? And he says, the same kind of people who name their Rottweiler Jesus. So let's end this part three with the story of questions. The rabbi is sitting in his class, and he asks this question of the class. He says, are the sins of the father visited on the children? So one student stands up and he quotes Exodus. He says, Exodus 25, which says, the sins of the father are visited on the children to the third and fourth generation. And the rabbi says, that's right. So another student stands up and he says, quotes from Deuteronomy 24:16, and he says, children, this is the quote, children shall not be put to death for the sins of the father. So rabbi says, that's right. So a third student stands up and he says, rabbi, the first student said yes. The second student said no. How can that be? And the rabbi says, you're also right. That's what we do with questions. We ask the questions, and even though they're contradictory, they can lead to humor, but we're asking the questions.
So that's the advice that our comedy expert is giving you, is to go home and think up some questions. Please don't send them in to us. Thank you, Jules, very much.
Pleasure.
And thank you for listening. Don't forget to listen next Sunday at 10 past 10. And if you've missed this program, you can go to www.planetaudio.org.nz/Radio Shalom. And I believe that you can listen to the last five programs for a month after today. And we would like to thank most sincerely our sponsor, NatureBee.